Good to see you.
Yeah, I didn't write you anything. I kind of get behind on life.
That's quite all right. You don't have to write me anything if you don't need to. We can just jump in to anything you want to talk about on the calls. I haven't heard from anybody else last week. Actually, nobody could make it last week, so we didn't have a call last week. And I haven't heard from anybody this week. Actually, let me just check. I haven't looked. So when I say I haven't heard, there's a good reason why. Me just make sure. Yeah, no word. Okay, good. All right. Well, we can jump into whatever's going on for you. I'm happy. I want to sort of follow up on, we had a number of things that we were checking in on and kind of guiding you on. I want to see how all those things were turning out, if you can remember what those things were, and then just see where you're at and what you're focused on.
I'll be frank, I don't remember where we left off, but there were some items.
I'll tell you the big one. I mean, we don't have to go back and revisit things if you don't want, but one of the big ones was you were trying to manage a lot of complex stakeholders, negotiating your authority in that room. And I was making suggestions on how to kind of establish your authority and to set all that up. So that's what I was curious about.
Well,
And then you also had a big presentation. You had a big presentation was helpful.
Okay, so I guess I spent last week in Vegas, and I did that, right? So I had presentations, and that went well. For the most part, everything with my customers and partners went well. An event like this is attended by almost 50% my partner ecosystem and like 25% prospects or existing customers, and like 20-25% staffed by ourselves to interact with people. So these kind of things are just, it's fun doing the personality profile stuff, but some of the stuff I know about myself, these events are draining on me. A little bit of an introvert in that regard. The reason it gets draining on me is just the internal politics of when people get together. The kissing of the ring within the hierarchies. And it's really that there's a blend of different hierarchies, different organizational hierarchies. One is the services facing and the other is the product in these types of organizations. And it's pretty common. And the services, I've come to the top of it. And so I have a good time in those ones. And then when we blend with the product, it's a whole different world. And that's really the world that I play in now. And different people, different game, different actors, it kind of just tires me out. That hierarchy behaves in such a totally different way that's foreign to me. So it just drains a lot of my energy when I go for a week of that. But overall, the week was good. Worked with a lot of great customers. Just boring, is an interesting word that comes to my mind. It was boring. Being in Vegas, usually, boring is not a word that would come to your mind. So, that's interesting to say the least. And then your techniques on speaking helped. I did use them. I appreciate that. I definitely needed it getting into the room, the atmosphere that I was in. Lack of time to prep, so that it did help me in the moments of
Awesome.
and then I'd say, the negotiations that I have going on, and I took some steps to balance out the power in the room and persuade some stakeholders. Now, one of the main stakeholders that I'm trying to persuade and bring across has some power over me as well, because they would be the person that I report into now. So I brought them in because they would be impacted as a stakeholder in these negotiations. However, the way that it kind of works out is that, this is the first time they're seeing me operate, and they don't understand a freaking thing that I do. It's challenging for me because, over in one organization, I'm at the top of that organization. And, I'm at the level of a my title is practice director. I have the authority of X, It's a, I have the highest status in that organization.
Okay.
Right. So that, you know, none of that really matters, but it's, I'm a VP. Okay. It's a junior VP. And so I have the same decision-making authority and financial-making authority of a VP. And then when I come across into his world, it does reshuffle the deck for me. And it basically puts me, you know, my chief, a VP, he's a VP reporting to a VP, which is odd for me. Because then it's like VP, VP, VP.
Yeah.
And that's been a frustration for me. But in their world, it's, even though there's a hierarchy, it kind of doesn't matter where you fall because there's different product silos. And it's, I work directly with some chiefs and this guy's just like a satellite manager to me. So it's almost not important to me, right? He's mm-hmm. just a guy, more of an HR function. And also I lose like capacity of my resources because I can't have like direct reports in this role. And I lose capacity of my budget because in this new organization, over my previous organization as a practice director, I'm accountable for all financial, you know, solvency of the practice. Over here, it's like, no, only the chief has the purse strings, period. And that's over tens of thousands of people. So everything's a freaking budget request on every little thing. So it's super frustrating going from having complete autonomy and complete control to just feeling like now you're a manager. Because you're, you know what I mean? Like you're three levels down. Yeah, and then
you're demoted. It's a demotion functionally.
Yeah, it feels like almost like a demotion in some case. And then you have a satellite manager person who's like, they have no idea what a practice director even is. And they're just looking for a product manager. So I'm kind of coming to blows with that. And I knew that was going to happen. I think you and I discussed that a little bit.
Yeah.
Not as directly as I'm saying it now, a while ago. And this is where I was mentioning in the past, like my previous direct report or my previous manager, you know, was a necessary evil. And he still is. Because as much as I'm happy to get out from underneath the pressure of being in that organization, this guy, you know, raised me as like his son. He's kind of just like, if I'm going to transition you over there, you need to stay in my leadership team. You need to stay accountable for all of these things. Otherwise, they're just going to treat you when you get over there as like a manager, right? And then you people hit these burnout rates and there's a quick attrition. And so, you know, he's looking out for me as much as possible, while at the same time, you and I have talked, you know, it's like, of course, he's just going to try to use you to get to where he goes. So I'm in that weird situation where I'm trying to balance that. And the reality is where I want to be is in the new guy's world, right? But I don't like the level or place that I'm at, and it's not a negotiable spot. And the reality is negotiating it is not coming from a place of power, because they don't really care about it in this new world at all, which is really, it's different to me. So I'm coping with that.
It sounds like you have quite a lot of freedom then. If they don't care about titles, here's the conversation. And I don't mean to jump in or tell you what I think needs to happen before I've really heard what you're saying. And by the way, hi, Robin, welcome. This is a just sort of a truism in general about functioning in an organization. The most important thing for you to always be calibrating against is, what is my level of authority and responsibility, and is it matched by my same level of accountability? So if I have an accountability above my level of authority, then that is going to create problems, stress, anxiety. If I have a balance, if they match, then I'm good. So the question is it balanced for you? And if it's not balanced for you, then it sounds like it's not that hard of a conversation, because you're no longer talking about levels or titles or pay, or which are all the things that politically in organizations cause roadblocks. You become a person who says, I'd like to become a high functioning player in the system. That's the objective. In order for me to achieve that, there are one of two things needs to happen. Either I need to lower the level of accountability, or I need higher levels of access, visibility, conversation, authority, whatever, in order to achieve this end. And if that isn't able to be done and you're not able to measure accountability differently, what are the other levers that maybe I'm not thinking of? You know, so you may already have the answer to this. I just, as you were talking, that's what came to me was whether you feel you're properly calibrated with authority and accountability.
That's what we're working through is calibration right now. And, you know, it was kind of off-putting to me because the first thing that the new guy wanted to do was reduce accountability. Okay. And to me, that felt like it was de-minimizing everything that I worked for because I had accountability of an entire value chain. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I was attached to that. I guess, you know, because I'm, you know, on the Enneagram, I'm a three, and I took that personally. Right. So I was like,
I don't think that's a personality trait. I think that's a human thing. I think anytime somebody lowers accountability, it will feel as a demotion.
Right.
And so that is absolutely what you just experienced. And it's normal for you to feel bad about that. Not bad about yourself, but bad about that. That's normal.
And so, you know, what we shifted to then was, and he learned it quickly within like a week. We met in person in Vegas, and his approach was more like, just tell me whatever you need, whoever you need to meet with. And I only really work at the C level then in my company, and which is why it gets confusing to me. Is like, why do I have like three V levels in between me, right? And, you know, he's just like, well, this is critically important to the company, which is why we're bringing you across and disrupting your career. You're right. I don't know what's going on in your career. I don't know what it is you do. I can see it's way too much. And so I was looking at it for how to reduce things, but what do you need to do? Just tell me your vision and your strategy and who do you want me to help get in line to help make that successful? And so on the other side of that coin, I think this guy's, you know, a good manager in that regard. He's going to just help, right? I don't see him as a blocker, right? But, you know, that's what I'm working through right now. So we're still sorting out that.
So to navigate politics, you've got to get really good at articulating the difference between and avoiding power conversations and talking about functionality. That just that language, like levels and titles, and that's all power conversation. That is what you're talking about. But in reality, what you can really be talking about is like, this is what I need in order to function optimally. And so that's going to mean I'm going to need line of sight here. I'm going to need access here. I'm going to need decision-making power here. And then let him go, oh, well, that doesn't work because of these power things. And you're like, yeah, fine. I don't care about the power things. I'm just letting you know these are the things that I functionally need to be successful. And that's going to effectively help you be seen as a problem solver rather than a ladder climber. Does that make sense? Not that I'm saying you're being seen that way. I don't know what you're being seen as. I just know that once you get into the conversation about this kind of stuff, span of control is what you're talking about. Span of control very quickly becomes an ego debate. And managers are always having to manage that kind of like, oh, ego, this person needs that or wants that or whatever. But you and I both know you can feel the difference between somebody who's like, I want to be a VP. I want to be a C-suite. I want to be, right? Versus someone who's just like, I don't care about my title. I'm not asking for a different pay structure. I'm asking for functional execution. And here are the things that I know I need. And you're clear, you're not anxious, and you use phrases like that. Access, line of sight, decision-making authority, and just map those out for that person. And you don't have to draw the conclusions for him. You may know that by asking for this kind of authority, it's going to be taken from someone else. You don't need to talk about that. That's not your problem. That's his problem.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And it's coming from a weird place, I think, where I'm not sure if he has that perspective per se. However, he could easily get there with me, right? And as some background, I don't know if I told you this or not, but I was offered this position as, you know, promotion, and then I turned it down twice.
I remember it, yeah.
Okay. And then I was voluntold, like, this is what you're doing. Yeah. And it was like through some like strategy, I picked this guy. So he doesn't even really know like why I picked him.
Yeah.
Of the people that I had available for like me choosing, like if I'm going to go do this, how would I do it? So I think it's just kind of like a bit of an odd thing too. So I had a chance to talk to him about that.
Oh, okay.
And I think that helped him connect the dots then to see where, you know, like why am I even working for him and why did I choose to work for him?
Yeah.
Good. So that was useful.
That'll go a long way. Yeah.
I don't think he sees it like that as much. I think he starts to see like why I'm going to be, you know, working with him and we're going to add value to each other. Like a power grab in his organization or anything like that, or that I care about titles, but he does see me for some reason as like he has this mindset from a command and control structure. You know, he's a very dominant D in the disk profile of just,
yeah, sure.
I'm going to, you know, put you in this box and this is what I see you as doing. And this is what you were doing. I don't really know what that is, but you got to figure out who you want to be. And I'll support that, but you got to tell me who you want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes all the sense in the world. But again, I'm just giving you sort of, I'm not saying that anything is problematic. I'm just giving you suggestions for how to stay in the right place so that you're read the way you intend to be read.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. We can come back to you in a minute. Robin, let's check in. How you doing?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I wasn't able to join last week.
That's all right.
I'm real busy. Yeah.
I was at a conference and actually Robin, nobody was able to join. So it was perfect for me because it was very noisy where I was and I was trying to find a quiet place and I couldn't. So I was actually relieved that nobody was able to make it.
Yeah. There's always like those people at big conferences, like in alcoves between.
Yes, like, trying to do something. I was that guy. Yeah.
And you were just in Vegas too, right? Zach, so it might've been you too at some times, right? We've all been there. So I guess it all worked out. Yeah. So things have been going good. I'm excited because I was starting in this new position and I had somebody teed up to be kind of my lead architect. And a month in, he ended up taking a job somewhere else because he was gonna get to become like kind of like a CIO, but for a state department. And it's just a really big opportunity. One that I didn't think he was necessarily ready for, but anyways, he took the position and he left. And so it kind of really slowed down my ability to build traction in this new architecture group that we're starting up. And so I've had this position posted for a while and I've been, you know, interviewing candidates, going through that whole process. And this week, I think I actually identified someone really solid that's an internal hire, which is always nice because we're not, you know, having to teach a bunch of institutional knowledge and cultural assimilation. Like he can get up to speed a lot faster. So that's something exciting this week.
Yes.
Yeah. A couple other things that I wanted to kind of bring forth, and as I'm processing right now. And so I feel like sometimes talking it out helps me process and helps me make sure in some of what I'm doing that I'm not, I have a blind spot. So we're doing some, I have kind of three key functional areas of responsibility. And so for one of those three functional areas, it's the enterprise, it's like the application management function. And that function is responsible for maintaining and doing minor enhancements for applications in our company. And then the other part of their responsibility is implementing net new or changing aged or net new systems. So there's kind of like the run function and like the grow and transform function, all for the application space. And so for that part of my responsibility, there are actually three leaders. So there's three of us that lead that group, which is there's three of us that lead that group. And then we each have a couple managers, and then there are teams. So I'm a leader of managers in this context. And we did our strategic planning. We started doing one of our strategic planning sessions for next year. And our process is a three-step process. It's listen, assess, and strategize. So we're kind of in the midst of finishing up the listening tour, where we're speaking to partners that we work with across the organization. We're speaking with the teams, we're speaking with the managers, and gaining insights. So it's to, you know, what's going on, what's the lay of the land, what works, what doesn't work, that whole thing.
And that's the one of the guys that we strategized about how to have that conversation with, as I recall.
Yeah. He was a business stakeholder that, a little tricky. That conversation went really well. So I think we figured out how to leverage his personality in a way that's going to, I think, benefit the group. But one of the things I'm kind of struggling with what we did to start our strategizing was just kind of play back, like, hey, here's what we've been hearing. What are some of the major themes? And drawing those out. And what is really overwhelming sometimes when you do these listening tours is there's a lot of good stuff going on. Don't get me wrong. But there is a lot that is broken and mismanaged because this particular function has not had a senior leader for about 2 years. And sorry, there was somebody in position, but they weren't acting in the capacity of a senior leader. So a lot of the middle management have been kind of running what's been going on, and they haven't been taking a step back in what they do and how they make choices. They've been kind of just blocking and tackling. And when that happens, you're essentially doing what needs to be done, but sometimes things fall through the cracks, or you're not actually improving, or you may not be delivering in the way that you need to. So what's overwhelming from some of this listening tour and as we were strategizing is, there's a lot that has to change. There's a lot that has to change. And I'm aware that human capacity for change is not unlimited. And what I'm trying to reconcile is, we can't change everything. So, like, what are the big rocks that are probably the right bets to make, because we're not going to get to everything this year or next year or the following year. That's just not how we're not actually organized in a way where we have capacity to take on a lot in a different way. So we only have probably like 15 to 20% of what we could make a change in. And I'm just trying to think, first of all, like, I wanted to just check in on that and say, like, am I also, do I have a incorrect belief about humans' capacity to change and take on change? Or am I kind of being pretty realistic when I'm thinking about the plans for next year and how much change to really...
Organizations are capable of extraordinary change when the people who control the levers understand how change can happen.
Okay.
So the first question you have to ask, so your assumption is not right. People can go through incredible change when it's done well. When it's done poorly, you'll find profound resistance.
Right.
Second thing I'll say about change, in change management, and really candidly life in general, we tend to dramatically overestimate how much we can achieve in the short term. We tend to dramatically underestimate how much we can achieve in the long term. So think through what are the things that you're wanting to achieve. And if you give it long enough time, it is quite possible you can way outperform that. And so that's one thing to just be aware of, is like, okay, one way to manage large scale change is to protract the timeline and you accordion out a longer period of time to bring about change. So I'd have to understand quite a bit more about the complexity of the change before I could give like really specific suggestions, but that's just two general principles. The third one is when it comes to trying to impact change, you want to know which levers do you actually control and which levers do you not control? And are you able to get access to the levers that you don't currently control? So that will also determine the span of change, because if you can't get access to certain levers and those levers are needed to impact a certain part of the organization, then you won't be able to move that needle. So that's important for you to map. Like, what are the levers I control? And you can literally write these down under levers I control. List them out. What are all the things that I know I have the ability? Levers I don't currently control but could, and levers I don't control and don't think I'll be able to. Does that make sense, or am I going down the wrong rabbit trail?
No, I think it does. I guess I'm just, when you're talking about a lever, I want to, what's an example of what you mean by that?
Yeah, so like a lever would be, okay, and again, maybe you should give me more examples, but I'm just thinking in general terms, like, let's say you know you have to change a policy. Some policy has to be implemented and some set of agreements have to be made and those have to be legally written in a certain way. Well, now if you have a legal department and then somebody who presides over policymaking and authority over policy, then it's a question of who's got what levers, who has what powers to change or affect that policy. That's just an example. I have no idea if it's remotely related to what you're talking about, but you would look at what are all the changes I need to make that I think need to happen. And so, for example, staffing, maybe you need to get rid of half the workforce. Do you control that lever? Probably not. So who does? And you then need to go to them to pitch. If you want this change, here's the lever that needs to be pulled. And then we talk about whether or not that should even happen. So I'll just pause there and you tell me what kinds of, I mean, I don't know, maybe I can't understand the changes, maybe they're too technical and so I wouldn't.
No, the changes are mostly behavioral, like none of them are technical, right? I mean,
okay, so what's an example of a behavioral change that you believe is a bridge too far? Just, it's too much to ask for.
So that's the thing. I think separately, I don't actually think any of them are a bridge too far. I think they're kind of basic and fundamental. It's just the amount of the basic and fundamental or the, so for example, I want to, I want to kind of change the way that we manage, I don't even know if it's managed performance, but basically I want to implement, it's a practice of setting OKRs, objectives and key results for the functional group and break them down into quarters, like quarterly, break that annual goal down into quarterly goals and then have the managers break that down to them and then have the individual contributors break that down for them. And then on a quarterly basis, I want us to actually measure how we did against those. That's something as a fundamental practice that does not happen today. That's not something I don't think is reasonable to do, like that process, right?
Right. But what you just described is a series of levers that you would like installed that everybody else will have to switch.
Right.
So that's a great example of a whole lot of levers that are not in your control. Unless they work directly for you. Is that the case? Do they work directly for you?
Yes.
Oh, well, then well, you like, do have control.
Well, the managers and then the teams under the managers. But yes, everybody reports to me.
Oh, well, then you do have control over those levers. Great.
Yeah.
So that's actually very straightforward.
Yeah. So that one, I was like, I think doing that is totally reasonable. Now what those OKR, like what the objectives and the key results that we're looking to drive towards, that's where it gets to be more change in behavior and more change in where the focus and energy is of a human being. So for example, if one of my objectives is I have to minimize key person risk in this department. Because right now we have a bunch of people where we have like a ton of single points of failure. No one can cover for them. And if they left and got hit by a bus tomorrow or won the lottery, we would be in really bad shape. And so some of the things that I know we need to fundamentally do is we need to really prioritize knowledge transfer and documentation, which is something that's going to take a lot of time, effort, and energy from a lot of people.
Sure.
But we're not we're not staffed for them to be able to do what's currently on their plate and accommodate that. Right.
Okay. So a couple of things then, just to first thing I would say is in the same way that you did with this other person, where you were like, I need you to take this on, you're just prioritizing. So when you say they're currently not able to do what's on their plate and do this, then and if you know as the leader and manager, it is your job to know what matters more than another thing. What you can do is look at a series of things that they have on their plate and say, this one little thing over here, we're going to take it off. We're going to add an hour a week or 30 minutes a week devoted to this other thing that I'm introducing. And now I want you to know that all accountability and alignment is around this other thing that I just replaced that thing with. And so that's something that you can do. And it doesn't, you know, think about it in terms of how many minutes or hours are required to do this, and then see if you can economize some other places or simply delay those things so that you're freeing up bandwidth in order to do the thing that you think is more important.
Yeah.
We also decide to say, you know, prolong this change over a longer period of time, because you know you just don't have the bandwidth. That's okay too. You know, but in management, anything really, cheap, fast, or good, pick two. Can't have all three.
Yeah.
So that's that. The other thing I'll say is go back and watch. I think it's one of the last videos in module one. It's just a reminder. One of the best processes for managing change, and which change management is pain management, is to think about how you stage the ascent up the mountain. And when you hike Everest, you go from base camp to camp one, then you go back down to camp one, base camp. Then you go camp one, and then you go up to camp two, and then you go all the way back down to base camp. And it's this staging, this weird journey where you're going up and down and up and down. And so the first step on any journey is going to be awareness.
Why is that?
It's to acclimatize yourself to the altitude.
Oh, okay.
So you have to do that, and otherwise you'll have all kinds of brain hemorrhages. So the same thing is happening in change management. The first step is awareness. The second step is understanding. The third camp is enrollment. Then there's ownership, then there's leadership, and that's the summit. You don't have to get to those. You just need to get to camp three. But when you do that, you have to cascade it through the system. So for example, nobody who manages another person should be at the same camp as that person they manage. So you need to bring all of your next line managers to awareness before you ever bring anybody else to awareness. And the reason for that is because if you bring them both to the same camp on the same day, the people that they are managing will go, hey, why are we doing this? And they're going to go, I don't know. I just learned about it. In that moment, they collude against you. They don't know they're colluding against you, but they have now sowed anxiety and doubt. Whereas if the first line of management is aware, and then you bring them to understanding, which is camp two, then you can bring the next group to awareness, because then they're going to go to the manager and they're already at camp two, which is understanding. And they go, why are we doing this? I'm like, well, I understand why, and here's how, and here's what, and et cetera. And then they can bring the next one. So that's a cascading, and you just build it into an Excel calendar. You basically say, by this date, this group of people, we need to have a meeting. The goal of that meeting is to get people to the level of awareness. Then we're going to have a second meeting. At that meeting, we're going to bring them to the level of understanding. After that, we're going to have a meeting with the next group, bring them to awareness. Then we're going to bring that group to understanding while we bring the group above to enrollment. Enrollment, so it's awareness, understanding, enrollment, ownership, leadership. And you only have to go to the first three camps. So that's all in video two, video 12, I think, of module one, in a lot more detail than what I just described. But I think that could be really helpful for you, just in terms of figuring out the cadence. You know, how long will it take to make this change? Because when you're just talking about just that OKR thing,
Yeah. That's
literally just cascading expectations and aligning people's behaviors to new expectations. Requires education, requires some group processing, but you just need to make sure that the way you manage the emotional system is by making sure everybody's on firm footing before their direct line down has any questions. They don't, and this is the key distinction here. Part of change management, when it comes to change management, one of the most important things you can do is give people permission to resist it. So that's why the first stage of change management is awareness, and awareness is defined as you don't have to understand it, you don't have to care about it, you don't have to agree with it. You just need to know that something's coming. Camp two is understanding. You still don't have to care about it. You still don't have to like it. You still don't have to agree with it. I just want you to understand it fully. And you do those two before you ever require them to say, now I want you to enroll. That's where you say, I do agree, I do want this, and I do care. When you give people that kind of gradation and steps, they are much more amenable to change.
Yeah. I think that no, this is helpful. I'm thinking about, these different, the phases of change management. And are there signs to know, like, when you're ready or when we're ready to move to the next phase? Because some of it, like, I have some timing leeway, and then another instance is like, nope, this is the date. And we gotta work backwards from the date. But are there truly some kind of red flags as to when, like, this is like, stop, do not proceed, because it's just not going to be good. It's not going to work out for you if we keep going. Like, are there?
I, in my experience, almost any organization can take on change as long as they're not in crisis. So the biggest thing is, if you're in crisis, if the wheels are falling off, if there's something seriously problematic happening in the system, most of their emotional energy will be diverted into that crisis, and you won't have emotional reserve to be able to make the change in a way that's effective. People do it all the time, and it just means the change is not bought into. And that's the thing about change management. You know, when you're trying to run change through an organization, you can absolutely just turn the change on tomorrow. The problem is, you won't have buy-in.
Yeah.
So everything about change management is about, how do you generate more and more buy-in? And one of the ways you do that is you give people that feeling of choice. Some level of, I'm choosing this change with you, rather than you're doing it to me. That's where people resist. And humans aren't made for hierarchy. They're autonomous people. They like power and sovereignty. So you have to give them that in small places where you can.
Yeah. And so why I think the OKR quarterly cadence and process is so powerful is because I'm just going to tell you what's expected to be done by the end of the quarter, how you get there. This is the template that you're going to have to fill out at the end of the quarter, but like, how you get there and how you reach those results, like, fine, whatever. We don't care as much about.
So how many levels do you have in your team that you're trying to implement this in?
Just two levels below me.
Okay. So it's you, one, and another. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not that complex then.
Actually four. It's me. I have a director, and then I have two managers, and then the individual contributors.
Okay. So. But it's just one director.
Yeah.
Okay. That's still not that complicated. That's an easy conversation. Are you guys already aligned on a lot of this?
Yes.
Okay. So first thing you do is you have a series of conversations until you get your director to understanding, not enrollment. They don't have to agree with it. They don't have to care about it. They just need to understand fully why you want to do this and what it means, what the implications are. Then the two of you get in front of your managers and you do the exact same thing to start, which is you just bring them to awareness. You say, hey, a new thing's coming. We're still working out exactly when. You can expect another meeting in about 2 weeks. I want you to be aware of this. And that's the only goal, is just for you to be aware of it. I don't need you to care about it. I don't need you to worry about it. I don't even need to understand it. I just need you to know that change is coming and you're going to be given some more information. Okay. Then you hopefully get your director to enrollment. Like, yes, I'm bought in. I want to be a part of this. Then you try to get your managers to understanding next. Then after the manager understanding, you bring everybody else to awareness. And then once you get the managers to enrollment, you bring everybody else to understanding, and then you bring them to enrollment at the very end. And you just pick some dates, you know, and look, that awareness meeting literally could be 5 minutes in another meeting. You're just going to know that you're going to spend a few minutes making them aware, and you're going to give them permission not to care. And then one of these other meetings, you might need to be quite a bit more involved.
Yeah.
And then you have another meeting, which is even more involved than that one.
For gaining understanding, I'm curious, like, so we've kind of already done the awareness step with the director and the managers. I've started the understanding step with the director, and we're about to begin the understanding step with the managers next. Do you think there's anything, because something I wanted to do ahead of the meeting was send them like a couple video series to watch ahead of time that talks about what OKRs are and some definition? Or do you feel like that's something like that preliminary study might actually detract away from the process? Or do you feel like it will help?
Who are you wanting to send this to? The fourth level?
The third level.
Oh yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah. As long as you frame it in, hey, I told you there was some change coming. I've already made you aware of that. Now I want you to start building some understanding about the change. So if you could watch some of these videos, then we're going to meet, we're going to discuss it. And you state, and when you watch the video, I'll tell you, you actually state for them your objective and the rules. My objective is that you just understand, that you ask all the questions you possibly can. I still don't need you to think this is a good idea. It's okay if you think it's a bad idea. It's okay if you don't care about it. It's okay if you just don't even want to think about it or talk about it. But I do ask that you work with me to truly understand what this is, how it might work, and why I want to do it. And so ask as many questions as you can, because my goal is for you to understand, not care, understand, not agree, understand. And then next week, or in 2 weeks or whenever, then after you've really truly understood, then I want you to sign off on it. I want you to join it. I want you to be a part of it. I want you to say yes to it. But I don't want you to skip this understanding part. And I want you to have that freedom to push back and ask questions and raise challenges if you want. But, you know, this is the process we're going to go on together. I mean, I've literally shown people that staging the ascent map in every one of those meetings. And I'll say, everybody, we're trying to get to camp one today. Here's how the camps are defined. Try to get to camp one. That's your only goal. Hopefully I'll do my job. Next week, we're going to try to get to camp two. Don't worry about that now. We'll get to that later. So people even know, like, oh, you mean we're hiking Everest? Yeah, we're going to hike Everest. And here's how we're going to get there. And so don't worry about it. We're going to break it down and it's funny. I mean, I've done that with an entire organization and people start to have a shared language. Like, or where are they? They're at camp two. Okay. That's understanding. Great. So.
Yeah. I almost feel like being overly clear in this instance would just help. Because there are like a lot of complexities when it gets into the weeds, but I think, yeah, that'd be useful. Okay. Thanks.
I'm not sure if that answered all of your questions, but I mean, what that helps you do is it helps you figure out what the timeline actually is for maximum buy-in.
I think
what it means is you slow things down in order to actually speed things up for later. Because when I've done change management and people want to go fast, it ends up creating lots of problems later. So when you do the process of slowing things down and having the right conversations the right way at the right time, you speed everything up on this end.
Okay. Yeah, no, that was helpful. I think the biggest thing was, I almost knew the answer. I was like, this feels like a lot.
It is a lot.
And it is a lot. I'm not underplaying it, but I was thinking like, this is a lot. I don't know if we can do this.
You can. If you have the right process and you respect the time it's going to take, and you're mindful of the exact thing you already did once before, we already had this conversation, you're mindful of how to prioritize behavior, because that is your responsibility. Your responsibility is to help them understand this matters more than this to me. And this happens before this, or whatever that is, right? But you've got to be able to provide them that. And if you need to realign it all, you can realign it all. Absolutely. That's how organizations thrive, is they make big changes. Yeah. But they just understand, you know, the bigger, the more complex, the longer it's going to take.
Okay.
So you can totally do it.
Yeah, do it. I do think
Those videos. Watch some of those key videos.
I do think that the... we got to get more specific about understanding, like you said, like, is it an hour a week that it would take us to get there? Is it this much? Like, so we know like how much we do need to create space for.
Yeah, you're right. You do need to spend time.
Probably the next place I'll spend time. So
yeah. And this is also part of giving them guidance. So you let them know, we've thought through this. We believe that if you're spending more than 1 hour a week on this, we aren't doing it right. This should not be more than, or whatever the number is, 4 hours, 30 minutes, don't care. And that way they know, like, just track your time. And if you're spending more than an hour, you've spent too much time on it already. You know, but if you spent 10 minutes, that's not going to be enough.
Yeah.
So you give them delimiters so that they understand like how to manage their time. And you're like, hey, don't overthink it. Or, hey, this has to be absolutely right or it breaks everything.
Mm.
And let them know which things have to be absolutely right and which things they can rough in.
Okay.
But what you're doing, what you're undertaking when you do change management, anytime you're going to change anything in a system, you are actually undertaking the role of a trainer. You are going to be training. So I want you to think of yourself as an educator. Every time you go and try to change something, you start as an educator.
Okay.
Because all of the things we just talked about are educational, mm-hmm. training in nature.
Yeah.
But I hear you, I see you kind of going, whew. I want you to know you need to do that for you first.
You yeah. need to
get your own plate and say, what are the things that I can't do anymore for the next so long because I got to get this done instead?
Which is why I'm making that sigh and that face. I'm like, oh, shoot. Like I have to create, because a lot of the definition that's required so that it's digestible, I guess that is a question. There's a lot that does need to be defined here to create clarity. And if we're the leaders, the tactical act of putting in some of this definition takes a shit ton of time mm-hmm. and is actually like pretty in the weeds at times. And mm-hmm. And that's where I'm trying to, there is parts of it that I need to delegate, but I,
yes.
But I would need the directors and the managers to be probably all the way to enrolled before I can start delegating pieces, right?
It depends. You can break the whole thing up into, we're not even taking on a change management project until we define things. So we're going to spend the next 6 weeks just building and refining definitions and identifying metrics and, you know, we're just going to gather all the things we know we need and calculate all the things we need to calculate. And then we're going to figure out appropriate benchmarks. And then we're going to go in and tell everybody, we need to be at this number on this day. This is what appropriate OKR is. This is what isn't. This is, that's another way to do it. Again, I can't know.
No, that's, I think that's right. I guess I was just like, to do it right, I do think we need probably like 6 to 8 weeks of getting just some of the definitions for what's in place. And
that's normal. That's
have to create space for that. And I was like thinking mentally, like, I want to kick this off for 2022. That's not the right way to think about it. It's still kicking it off. It's just, it's moving some of the work that gets actually done. Those targets can't be until the next quarter, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that was helpful. Okay. Yeah.
You're doing great, but just elongate your timeline. Go, you're very hard on yourself. Elongate the timeline, take a deep breath, and know that it's okay. It doesn't all have to happen right away. I know that's not ideal. I know ideal is that it was implemented 6 years ago. But, you know,
yeah. You've been going but it wasn't. And that's what's good about it is the leader that was in place is technically our CIO. The problem was is she was too many levels above to do the type of leadership work that was focused here. So she's not like chomping at the bit for us to have already had this change. Like she knows that she's probably a part of the reason why some of the things aren't there. So at least we have some grace.
Good.
And
so air then manage that up also.
Yeah.
Okay. So you first need to do it for yourself. What do I need? What boundaries, what conditions do I need in order to undertake the next 6 weeks of building and learning in the weeds? Who can do that? How's that going to work before you even start a change management? Then once you have all the things, you've built effectively a training protocol, then you start scheduling out the cascade of change management and you populate those meetings with that information that you gather over the next 6 weeks. It just takes time.
Okay. Yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you.
You bet. Zach, anything else for you?
I would just add on there that I've been using that staging the ascent prior to joining the program because you had it free in your PDF download, and that was actually the thing that got me to join your program was the staging the ascent. So if you're going to go look at that, Robin, also one on that. I really enjoyed it. Found it useful.
Can I ask? I mean, I will watch the videos, but at the top, how do you talk about the top? Is the top the vision piece? Like the top of Everest? Like,
you know? Oh, no, the top of Everest is leadership. So the way it works is, you know, leadership is I am initiating, co-creating, and doing the things beyond what you already told me to do. You don't need people in your system to be at the level of leadership. You're at leadership. Okay. You're at the top of the summit. You are initiating, co-creating, imagining, envisioning what it could look and feel like. You're designing the change management, all that.
Okay.
Ownership is, which is Camp 4, just before the summit, it's ownership is it's mine now. It's not yours. I feel like this is mine and I'm going to take it with me wherever I go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enrollment is I'm in, I'm going to do what you asked. That's perfect. All you need. Okay. You don't need anything above that. If you get anything above that, it's gravy and you should promote those people, you know?
Well, I do think that for me, the leadership, like that leadership part of the ascent is something that is an expectation for the managers, I would say, to get there. So yeah.
Lower your expectation.
Lower it? Okay.
Yep. The only thing
you owner, need, owner.
No, the only thing you need is enrollment.
Damn.
This is important because it's what you're talking about is an emotional expectation, not a behavioral expectation. You will get everything you need behaviorally when people are at enrollment. If they're truly at enrollment, they will honor the agreements they make with you. And that's all you require. And you want to lower the bar for them.
Okay.
Because what happens is when you lower the bar, they start going, well, I kind of want to get to ownership. Okay, great. Go for it. As long as you're doing what I asked you to do, that's what matters to me.
So I had, I was managing and trying to kick off something like, it was like 20 or 30 different initiatives at my company. And there were change management per se, but they all had change management elements to it. And I had a change management program manager on it, and I had a communication program manager on it. And, you know, they were full teams. But they didn't have a framework, right? They didn't have a framework. Each manager had their own framework, right? They had a communication plan. They had launch plans. They had everything else, but they didn't have a framework like this.
Yes.
They didn't have an emotional life cycle tied to it, which was going through these ascents. And when I stumbled across this, it was obvious, but eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the feedback I had shared with Shane, because I was like, that's, you know, it made a lot more sense to me. And as an example, one of the programs that I think I had the most success with by leveraging the staging the ascent was I had a champion program where we were trying to upskill thousands of employees in our company to take on quality in their roles. Whether they were developers or analysts or program managers or whatever. And the main reason we're doing that is because our consulting force, we weren't going to go out and consult with QA engineers. And instead we were trying to follow the, you know, cutting edge of like not having QA people, but instead having devs and stuff owning their own quality and BAs owning their own quality and making quality everyone's responsibility. But at the same time, that can be insulting because it's like, you're going out and telling everybody that what you're doing is not quality and you're not doing your job well. And, right. So, you know, it can be a touchy subject. And so we had to go through these stages and we had to do it at different roles and different levels at different times and all the way through our manager levels and our director levels. And while also helping people learn how to recruit and ask for resources and ask for people onto their projects, onto these levels. So we found quite a bit of success with introducing the initiatives while following a framework like this, getting people to onboard and then understanding at each level, you know, it's starting out, people didn't care. They didn't even want to care. They just had to be aware. And then at the next level, the same thing. It was just like, still had to drive that awareness. And I was still getting fight and pushback from people saying, well, look, go start a QA practice. Let's just get some QA people in here. And at the next level, it's like, and now I got them enrolled. And then finally, once they were enrolled, building a, you know, self-sustaining community of the champions, the people who actually are buying into this. So that way I could let go and actually let them evolve their own ideas and start moving more into the leadership role and let them formulate the ideas and cycle through it. Right. And afterwards, looking, you know, and working with resource management teams and these different consulting managers and plucking out the ones who are really succeeding and saying, these ones did the best, promote them. Right. And then using it as like a way to elevate and promote. And so like, I really enjoyed that. This is the thing that actually brought me here today.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
And Robin, you will have people that will be at leadership at the lowest level in the system within 2 days. That'll happen. It's just not your goal.
Okay.
And it's awesome when it happens because suddenly someone's like, wait a minute, I got a great idea. I know that Robin was saying this, but what if we did this instead of that? Because when we do this, that happens. And suddenly you're like, that's a great idea. That's called leadership. They've already bought in. They already know what's going on. They're in for it, but now they're making it better. Now they're improving. They're coming up with new ideas. That's leadership. And you will have a couple people like that. And you'll have others that are like, this is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I don't know why we're doing this because I've got a really full plate. And I want to get home at 5 and you're annoying me. And you want them to be able to say that. And you go, yes, that's why I don't need you to care right now. And what you just did is you planted the seed emotionally that they go, that's so dumb. And then a week goes by and they're like, it's not as dumb as it was last week. Like, I guess I can understand that maybe, and all you're doing is you're respecting that feeling of sovereignty and choice. When a human makes the choice, when you give them the choice, you are giving them dignity. And I actually think that's one of the things that leaders and managers could get really, really good at when they try to get their people to do things their people don't want to do, is to set up choices and options and slow down the pacing so that you offer sovereignty, the feeling of sovereignty. And then when they have that, they feel dignity. And then when people are given power, they're actually more likely to give it away than to try to retain it all the time. If they fear that they're never going to have the power, then they clutch it. If you're really good about giving power, and everything about what we just talked about is giving people power, power to feel differently than you want them to feel, then they might go, well, you've given, you've respected me. Now I want to give back to you. So that's what this is designed for.
Shane, if I can add there, one of the things that I thought was probably the most useful for me as well is like when I had like my first initiative really do well using that framework, the most rewarding aspect to me was that when I was doing the awareness and the steps prior to enrollment, I wasn't taking it personal when people didn't care. Exactly. And that was like super liberating to me to just be like, yeah, that's totally normal at this phase. They don't give a shit and I don't care either.
Exactly.
And that was super liberating to me because I was watching other initiatives and other people get very frustrated. And then they're coming to me and asking, Zach, like, how come your initiatives are doing so much better? And now in my company, there's tons of champion programs for X, Y, and Z, but they're not doing anywhere near as well, of course, but they don't understand the framework. Yeah. And they're also very emotionally connected, you know, prior to the enrollment phase with what happens. And they also want to skip those phases and go right to, you know, from X to Z, and they miss out on all the things that necessarily need to happen. Right. And they don't actually get the enrollment. They want to go and get a chief to just kind of drive it downwards, which can help short term, but they don't actually get that. They don't get the individual to commit.
Yeah. I mean, Robin, there are times where I've presented this and I'll literally say like, hey, we're at camp one today. We're trying to get you to awareness. This is the stage where I want you to eye roll. I want you to go, oh, this is dumb. Why are we doing this? I want you. And you give that, you kind of make it a caricature. People laugh, they lighten up a little bit. They suddenly realize like, well, I guess I don't have to eye roll. Like, I don't have to be reactive to your power because you basically just gave me everything. You gave me the right. I want you to say, this is dumb and I don't care. I want you to feel that if you feel that, go ahead. Because where in the corporate world do you ever get permission to say, I want you to feel this is a stupid idea? You know, in the corporate world, it's always like, everything I say is amazing and you have to agree with me, even though all of us know that it isn't amazing and you don't agree, but let's pretend you do. That's the bullshit that nobody likes. So it's super refreshing when you're just a human and you understand that they're humans and you know that 80% of what actually goes on, the decisions they're going to make are how they feel. And you care about that to an extent. And then at some point you're going to say, hey, guess what? I've given you guys lots of time to think and feel and care and not care and argue and debate and all that. We're done now. Now I'm asking you for something. I gave you something. I'm going to ask something back. And what I want from you is I want you to enroll. I want you to choose. I want you to say yes to this.
Yeah, no, this is really good. I'm super, super helpful. I'm going to probably spend... So today is I'm probably going to spend today's Veterans Day. So I do have the day off. I do have my kids downstairs. But I probably will spend some time looking at that. Cause the other thing that I have is I have a couple peers that have to help me lead through this and I need them to follow the same framework and be on
100%
all of this because it's like without them and my director's a little emotional and she will take it personally, but by emotional, I don't mean that negatively. It's just, her automatic reaction is the problem is my problem versus the problem is over here. And I'm over here. Like she just kind of does that always. But
I'll tell you right now, what I'm telling you is take the slide from the training, take a screenshot if you have to, and use it in those meetings.
I think so.
With everybody. All the way down to the front of the line and just say, hey, the goal is this. This is the process we're on. This is why we're doing this. I know how lame it is when somebody up top makes changes and doesn't consider me. I don't want to be that. I want to consider you. And this is how I'm going to do it. And so we're going to celebrate when people are rolling their eyes because it means they're at camp one and you win. Goal achieved. And okay. Just changes everything.
Yeah.
This is the same thing that happened to me when I had to do cold calling in a sales role many years ago. And, you know, I called five people, they were all hanging up on me, upset, whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, I called five people. This is awful. I'm doing terrible. Can't believe it. And then my sales manager was like, Shane, it takes 30 no's to get a yes. Every time someone hangs up or gives you a no, I want you to mark a thing until you get to 30. If you get past 30 and you haven't gotten a yes, come and talk to me. Never made it past 10. Not once.
Yeah.
So every time I'm like, I win. I'm like a third faster than I should be. That's all it is. You're just playing with the emotional system.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Do you have time for one more scenario? Or over?
Yeah. We are over, but I'll give you more time.
It shouldn't take long. I guess I just don't know. I haven't decided how I want to respond to a certain situation. There's the good news is I'm starting to be asked to be a part of certain strategy sessions and discussions. The CEO has asked me to join and be a part of these things, which is great. You know, that's wonderful. He's asking me to work with.
How many levels are you away from the CEO?
Three. So CEO, Chief Administrative Officer, CIO, me.
Okay.
Is that three?
I think so. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Keep going.
And so he's, you know, asking me to join certain sessions. And I think it's because I presented to the executive committee a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know why, but in those scenarios, that's actually where I feel most comfortable. So I can kind of push back and navigate in a way that's pretty respectful of the room while like unearthing like pretty controversial shit. But it's kind of my favorite place to play, and it's fun for me because it's kind of like a science experiment. But so I did well in that scenario, and since then he's kind of asked me to enroll in a number of things to help with strategy. What's interesting though is the team, like the other people that he's asked to be a part of the strategy, are all people that are peers. No one is peers. Everyone's one or two corporate titles higher than me, but I partner with them at a peer level in different capacities and different initiatives. I have great relationships with each and every single one of them, and they all dislike each other. Very much so. And now we are being asked to come together and work on certain strategies. And a part of me is like, I'm excited because this is more science experimenting, right? Like this is more just like, oh, I'm watching this amazing like dynamic and seeing how power and people interact with each other in these situations. But what I'm, I'm trying to figure out, it's exciting, but it's also daunting because I know that these sessions could really take a turn for the worst, or could really be like a throw up our hands, people walking out of the room type of situation, because every single person besides me is, and I'm not saying besides me in a way that like I'm better than, it's more like they all really love control. So I'm walking into a room with four control freaks. And I'm just
gender balanced?
All female.
Okay.
All female, which is interesting too. Which is a part of why I think they're working even harder against each other sometimes. And I don't mean that, I just mean it's something I've observed. It's not necessarily true. No one said that, but I feel that. And sometimes, I don't know, you probably observed that too, where like there's that sentiment, even though it's not true, that there can only be one or there can only be one true leader because, you know, and I think there's some of that going on. So I don't, it's, this is coming. It will be happening in a couple of weeks, our session together. I'm missing the first one, which sucks because I won't be able to, you know, take the journey with everybody together, but they scheduled the first one while I am off island next week on vacation, and I'm honoring my boundary. And it also isn't the right thing for me to dial in when everybody else is going to be in person. I just feel like there's a number of reasons I decided to tap out. I don't know. I guess I'm just processing. All right, what to expect and how can I be a part of getting us to at least solid work product? I don't think we need everybody to be friends and everybody to have a wonderful relationship, but how, what can I do in my role and knowing that, like, I can really help in conflict, I can help with some conflict resolution. Like, how should I be mentally preparing for trying to make sure we honor the work and we're focused on the work as opposed to the power and like all that other shit? Like, just something I've been thinking about.
Well, it's hard to do in the abstract. I mean, what you said is abstract and vague without much data or anything. So I can kind of take a few, and the reason it's abstract and vague is because you haven't been in the room.
I haven't been in the room with them in this.
Yeah. So we're probably better off, you and I, talking about how to do that best after you've been in the room and you have a better assessment of what unfolded and how it went. That's probably my best advice, is just let it unfold. Just be an observer and a student like you are. You're a good read of what goes on in a room. You know, it's entirely possible that you're dealing with women in business contexts are really interesting creatures because they are a kind of, they experience lots of double standards, but then oddly enough, they often inflict it on other women the same way. Right. In fact, the weirdest thing is when they talk about gender bias, women are often the worst perpetrators of gender bias. Least likely to hear a woman speak in a meeting is often another woman. Which is weird. You'd think it'd be the man. Yeah. And men do that too. Men
I love that though. I truly observe that, especially amongst them too.
Yes. And that's what I'm saying by you're dealing with, it's a kind of an unfortunate thing that who women are, how they are made for the world, and their real gifts are not really truly respected in hierarchy. Hierarchy is a very masculine thing. And there are other organizing methods that would work better, especially when you have women in leadership, that better serve their gifts and their power. Whereas in hierarchy, it tends to silence them, and then they have to overcompensate or they have to fight a certain way. And of course, as a woman, you're never able to say that that's happening because then you're claiming and there are women that literally who are terrible performers who claim it's because they're women. And then that destroys the credibility of the argument. And so men never end up hearing the truth because they're like, but she's bad at her job. It's not because she's a woman. She's just bad at her job. Yeah. She's claiming, you know, read the book, Lean In. You guys aren't understanding. We're like, no, you're just not performing well. And, you know, you got this whole range of things. And I think there's a lot of layers and a lot of complexity that you're going to be walking into. And I think that's why you love it. I think you're going to be excited by it. And because you're a woman, you'll be able to read it more easily than any man would be able to. The only risk for you is, and this isn't because you're a woman necessarily, this is more your personality. You're much more conscientious. You're very, very careful as a personality. And, you know, I find myself coaching you to kind of, it's okay, go for it. You can do it. Say it, ask for it. And I think that's the only thing that could happen for you is that you end up a little bit too much in the servant role. And I think it might be interesting for you to be toying with how you assert yourself. Mm. Because if you walk in and go, these women don't like each other, they all like me. That's point one you said. Point two you said is, that they're all senior to me. You've already set it up so that you're the helper in the room, which is kind of the feminine role. And I guess I just want to say that's okay, but you may not have to do that. You know, you might be able to display and demonstrate directive clarity and leadership and things like that, which I'm sure you know how to do and you're very good at. I'm just giving you some observations about you after having coached you for a little while. Here are some things I see about you that may or may not be relevant to the situation you're talking about. I'm just flagging it for you in case you want to reflect on it and see.
It's good. And it's, I think what's interesting is I'm more comfortable asserting upwards than I am asserting down.
Yeah, that's something very possible too. Yeah.
Something I've noticed about myself more recently. Good. And so, yeah, I think, but in that scenario.
You sound well calibrated in that sense. That's a good thing. Like, what you're telling me is that you're more careful about people who have less power and you're less careful with people who have more power. And I think that's good.
Yeah.
No, because you're right. You guys have power. I don't have to be overly considerate and overly deferential. You have the power. And people who don't have the power, you're right. It is good for you to ask the question, am I asking too much? Is this appropriate? So I like that. That's good calibration.
Yeah, but no, that's good. I'll probably like come prepared with a framework or two in my back pocket just in case shit gets like, you know, out there. So then I can be like, okay, here's something for us to look at. That's not each other.
let's
rally around that.
Yeah, there's probably, again, because it's so abstract, I don't know the context, right. But you know, another thing that I'll often do is when there's like weird cat fighting, and I mean with men too, that's not a gender statement, when there's kind of just cat fighting and pissing contests and these things that go on, I try to drive people to really functional conversations around forming agreements. And you just say, looks like we need to form an agreement. Here's what you can expect of me. What can we expect of you? What can you expect of each other? Lay it out. What's your ask? Another great thing when people get kind of all over the place or you feel like the sentence is getting squirrely, memorize the phrase, what do you need? It forces them to come back to themselves and go, yeah, what am I? Why am I resisting so much? Or why am I underdoing this? Without making any care, you might be able to see in the moment, like, oh, that person's feeling this and they're angling for that and they don't like that and she hates her and all that stuff. But just cut through it with something as simple as, what do you need? And let's see if we can form some agreements. I understand the differences. I heard the differences, but let's see if we can form some agreements. What do you need? What do you need? And then you facilitate the agreement.
Okay.
So yeah. Those are some phrases.
Back to the fundamental, like those are some basics of just kind of driving the decision, but that's good to stop some of my, I can not think about it. I'm gonna stop thinking about it and I'm just gonna focus on those types of things. So yeah, appreciate this. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Pleasure as always.
Yeah. And so next week is
the week after. We're on next week. It's the week after that I'm pretty sure we're off. In fact, I know we're off because
it's Thanksgiving. So okay, perfect.
Is that right? Did I do that right? Yeah, next week is the 18th. We're on and then we're off on the week after.
25th. Okay, perfect. Yep, sounds awesome. Good.
Hey, where are you going on vacation?
Where?
Yeah.
I'm going to the Big Island. So just the island hop.
Oh, okay, cool.
But we're getting off the island.
That's good.
From one to another. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Okay, well, great talking to you. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye.